It is Wednesday, August 31st, 2005 at 9:30 a.m. This is the time for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting. We are here in the State Capitol Building, room 412. My name is Bob Saar. I'm a commissioner for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, and with me here in Pierre is Commissioner Dusty Johnson. Commissioner Hansen, are you on the line? Mr. Chairman, are you on the line in Sioux Falls? I will go through and I'll call the other conference call participants. First one I have on the list is Talbot Wozorek.
I'm here.
Thank you. Bob Towers. Bob Towers. Jeff Decker. Jeff Decker. Gene Callaghan.
Here.
Thank you. Cindy Grosvenor.
Here.
Thank you. Rick Johnson.
Yes.
Colleen Siebold?
Yes, I'm here, Commissioner.
Thank you. Jeff Larson?
Yes, I'm here.
And do we have somebody else join us on the line?
Yes, this is Commissioner Gary Hansen.
Good morning, Gary. The first item on the agenda is under natural gas, NG05002, in the matter of the application of Montana-Dakota Utilities Company for authority to increase rates for natural gas service. And the question today is, shall the commission grant the joint motion for approval of the settlement stipulation? And we do have representatives from MDU here in Pierre. I also want to check and see, we certainly want to give the public the opportunity to comment. And is there anyone in the audience who's interested in commenting on the case that's not a party? Okay, seeing none, then we will go to MDU. Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. Brett Kennecke from Pierre representing Montana and Dakota this morning. I'm accompanied by Tammy Aberley, Rita Mulkern, and Linda Snyder from the offices in Bismarck. They came down this morning. We stand ready to answer any questions that commissioners or staff might have about the proposal we've put forth.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions from staff? And I will go to staff comments in a minute. Any questions from commissioners?
If you could just explain briefly the distribution delivery stabilization mechanism. I think I understand, but I think it could be helpful to people listening on the Internet, or sometimes I don't really understand things I think I do. So,
Commissioner Tammy Eberly with MDU. Our distribution delivery stabilization mechanism is a means of adjusting the distribution charge, that delivery charge, which is the charge we have to deliver gas from the town border station to the customer's meter. And the mechanism will adjust that to reflect normal weather. So in the instance that we are experiencing colder than normal weather, we are actually over-collecting distribution charges at that point in time. If it's warmer than normal, we're under-collecting the fixed distribution costs we have associated with providing that service. So this mechanism is a real-time adjustment that looks at the weather associated with the service we provided to the customer in that particular billing month and adjusts it either upward or downward to reflect the effects of weather. We implemented this in the last winter heating season in our Black Hills service area and really had no customer inquiries with regard to it. We had some inquiries, but really explaining the adjustment and nothing further than that.
And that would just be on the non-gas portions of a bill.
That's correct. That is that distribution component, distribution charge that is set based on normal weather. So in this rate case, we're setting that assuming weather will be normal.
Normal weather in South Dakota. It would be interesting to know what that is, right?
Yeah. For this purpose, it's based on a 30-year average.
Okay. And so that distribution, I mean, that's, you know, ballpark somewhere between a fourth and a fifth of any particular bill?
Yeah, it represents probably about 20%.
Okay. And so this, I mean, it is in effect a real subtle way of shaving peaks and valleys to help the ratepayer.
It will stabilize their bills, that distribution component. Mm-hmm. If they take conservation measures, it would do nothing to frustrate that because, again, we're using their actual consumption and saying what they would have – used had the weather been normal. And so if they've taken measures to reduce their overall consumption, that will continue to be a benefit to them. And they continue to pay for whatever gas they actually used, which is that bigger piece, the 80% portion of their bill.
Could somebody talk a little bit about if the commission were to agree with the agreement put forth by the parties, what would be the return on equity? What would sort of be some of the financials from an end-to-use perspective?
Sure. The case that we filed is actually our first distribution case what we've defined as the East River service area, which includes Pier and the Mobridge areas, since we established service back in 1993. At that time, we established rates based on a 10-year levelized rate, and we're now past that time period. So we've seen some increases in operating expenses, as well as recognizing some throughput that we didn't experience that we had projected to experience in that original case. So we identified a revenue deficiency of approximately $1.8 million. Based on the magnitude of that, customer impacts, we chose to request an increase of $850,000, which actually produced an ROE slightly less than zero, just so to really get that so we weren't losing those equity dollars. And so that increase, and then through the settlement process, we've agreed to approximately that amount, approximately $850,000, which represents about a 13% overall increase to customers. For a residential customer, that would be about $8.40 a month on an annual basis for a typical residential customer.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that last figure, please?
$8.40 a month for a typical residential customer.
The impact that you have projected?
Yes.
And with the ROE,
go ahead.
Mr. Johnson, with the ROE slightly less than zero, I mean, how does that doesn't sound like a typical number you normally would be interested in hitting. I mean, could you explain a little bit how you arrived at that particular request?
Well, we looked at a number of factors. One, the fuels that we're competing with. We don't want to increase that distribution charge to the point where we are frustrating any opportunities to increase throughput on the system and in fact, could lose customers. So it was really a balance. And recognizing it's going to take us a few years, but we take that in smaller steps rather than in one large step.
And then with the Commissioner Johnson asked about the distribution delivery stabilization mechanism, and I remember us approving that for the Black Hills system, and I'm glad to hear that it seems to be working well. It seems to make a lot of sense, especially with the uncertainty in the commodity price of natural gas. Remind me, what is the true-up mechanism, or how do you look at that and make sure that you're in line with you're basing this on the 30-year average. Yeah, how do you make sure that you're in line with the actual cost?
What we actually, the mechanism is, as I said, real time. So at the time, we bill customers over the entire month. So when a customer goes through billing during this time period when we're adjusting bills, which would start on November 1, we adjust during that heating season. That customer, we know what the service period was associated with that bill. So let's say we were billing a customer on January 1, we would know that really represents gas they used in December, and we know the exact days. Then we look at the normal degree days associated with that billing period and what the actual degree days were and calculate an adjustment based on that. And it's applied then to the authorized distribution charge.
Now, a question on left field. When was your first customer established in the East River system? Do you know, when you actually started delivering service?
It was August of 93, I believe.
Okay, and I know that was the year the commission set the rates.
Yeah.
I was curious. Sometime in 93. Okay, thank you. Any other questions from commissioners? Any questions from general counsel or advisors? Commissioner Hansen, any questions for MDU? Commissioner Hansen, do you have any questions for MDU? Commissioner Hansen, are you on the line? We may want to check and see if there's some sort of audio trouble. That's a good question. Is anybody on the line? Talwai Zorich?
I'm on the line, Phil.
Thank you. I'll assume the other folks are on the line as well. While we're working out this little hitch here, did anyone else join the conference call since I called the roll?
Yes, I did. I had some difficulty getting through.
Okay, thank you. Who's that?
Bob Towers.
Oh, Bob, good morning. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'll check and see. Jeff Decker, are you on the line? Jeff hasn't joined us yet. Okay. We'll keep our ears open. Why don't I run through the call in list just in case we dropped anyone else. My apologies. Tal, you already indicated you're on the line. Bob Towers, we have on the line. Jeff Decker, not on the line. Gene Callaghan.
I'm on the line, Commissioner.
Sydney Grossfinner.
Here.
Rick Johnson.
Here.
Colleen Siebold.
Yes, I'm here.
Jeff Larson.
Yes, Mr. Chris.
Thank you. Anyone else on the line that I didn't call? Commissioner Hansen?
Hello.
Hey, good to have you back.
Thank you very much. I'd like to consider myself fairly astute with technological devices. I use PDAs and seem to know everything about computers. But when I switch from the mute to the headset on my telephone, I disconnected myself. I apologize for that.
Well, that's better than thinking you're on mute and not being on it. So, Commissioner, I'm just going to check and see. You were probably able to listen to the dialogue here in Pierre. Did you have any questions for MDU?
I heard everything up until you asked me that question. When I disconnected myself instead of disconnecting the mute, I have one question, and I know that it's been covered, but I think the biggest concern from the standpoint of the residential customer is how is this going to impact me. I think you've covered that pretty well, but I have a little bit of a concern from the standpoint of the rate shock over, say, from 1993 to 2005. There hasn't been any rate increase, and I understand that from the standpoint of a residential customer, they certainly appreciate that. The increase, though, coming all at one time can have a potential for a bit of a shock. I'm wondering, of course, this is probably the worst time right now for a rate increase. I guess there's never a good time. But could you tell us what you anticipate for the future? Do you see coming in and asking every 12 years or 10 years or 5 years for a rate increase?
Commissioner, this is Tammy Eberle with MDU. As I mentioned earlier and presented in our case, we actually identified a revenue increase need of $1.8 million approximately. We also recognize the length of time and trying to address rate shock and are asking and agreed to in the settlement to a much lesser amount, the $850,000. It will not be another 10 to 12 years before we're back. We need to gradually, and again, we want to do that on a gradual basis, but we need to get to a point where East River, this system, the area, gas distribution area, is producing a overall return similar to other gas properties.
So I'm interpreting that as to mean that you will be back sooner rather than later.
That is correct, sir.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Next, we'll see. Next, we'll go to staff. Good morning.
Yes, this is Dave Jacobson, representing Commission staff. Concurrently with the filing of the joint motion, staff presented a memo to the Commission outlining the analysis it took in this case and the positions that the parties agreed to. Answer questions. Staff is available here to answer any questions or concerns regarding that memo. Otherwise, we just recommend approval of the joint motion.
Thank you. I do have a question. Did you receive comments from the public about the rate increase?
Personally, very few comments that I had received.
And I know the local media and did a good job of covering it, and we've certainly given the public an opportunity to come in and comment on it. What was kind of the gist of those few comments that you did receive?
Well, initially there was, I'm only aware offhand of two comments that came in, and both of those, upon explanation of the nature of the increase, were both satisfied and no longer really had any concerns about the increase. I think everybody's concerned about the percentage increase in their bills and the ultimate dollars that it'll cost them, but I think customers also understand the circumstances of the increase. In reply to Commissioner Hansen's question about the need for future increases, the other thing that was pointed out in the case by MDU is their growth in the East River system is significantly above the average of their other systems. And so as that growth progresses, and if it can be maintained or even increased, that will help alleviate the need for future increases. The real reason that MDU is here with this type of increase is because they did not attain the sales that they estimated at the beginning of the their initial rate case.
Thank you.
And I was going to ask that question either to you or to MDU. We had some projections in 93, about 9,000 customers. It looks like in 2004 there were about 5,800. You'd mentioned that, I believe, Dave, that it appears that they're gaining customers.
Is their case reflected, I believe, about 5% growth in the East River system?
So, I mean, do you consider that you're moving in the right direction in this East River area, in terms of gaining new customers and trying to close that gap between, you know, the projections from 12 years ago and where we actually are now?
Yes, that's certainly going to help that situation. A number of things, you know, a lot of those customers that we were looking at back in 93, you know, were conversion customers, and there were some issues there that arose that didn't allow us to make as, you know, many conversions as we had anticipated. So now we're seeing some growth in this area, and that will help alleviate the need for a rate increase.
Have you analyzed some of the incentives in the energy bill yet? I've been told that there's some incentives there changing out old furnaces and so on and so forth. I mean, have you had a chance to look at that and see how that might impact it? It might be something that, you know, maybe some of these people are sitting there with 40-year-old furnaces that they might otherwise change out. They're just waiting for that day that they finally die. Have you had a chance to look at that?
I really can't address that specifically. I mean, we've looked at it in general terms. But even with the customers coming on now, certainly we've seen it on across the entire system, conservation, and reaction to gas prices, the gas commodity price. So even while we're seeing the customer growth here, we're still not, you know, coming on at the same volume level as they would have back in 93. So it takes a few more customers. I mean, actually, in this area, our average consumption is considerably less than the entire rest of our system. So I think a lot of, as I said, that new growth is obviously putting in the more efficient furnaces, and we would expect that to continue with the existing.
When you say the average consumption, you mean per customer,
yes.
Existing customer?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just curious, any analysis or reasons why you mentioned that you think maybe more energy efficiency?
Some of it's energy efficiency. Others is, I guess, in other gas areas, we typically see the water heating and the furnace heating, the space heating. And here I think we have a lot more that is only the space heating.
And have you done any sort of have you looked to why you might be seeing lower projections? I mean, you're off by quite a bit from 9,000 projected 93 to 5,800 now. I mean, any reason why those take rates have been so much lower than you guys initially projected? Or did you just miss the mark?
Could be some of each, but there was, I think, more so was the when we had first looked at this in terms of converting some of the propane equipment, there weren't the costs associated with that the homeowner would have that we expected. So there were additional conversion costs, and so, of course, when they're comparing fuels, they weren't as likely to convert as we had expected or used in our original analysis. And the propane dealers were very competitive, which we probably also didn't expect.
Great.
Factor in as much.
Thank you. Any other questions from commissioners for staff, or we've gone back to MDU as well? Any comments from advisors? Any additional questions from commissioners? Seeing none, I will move that we grant the joint motion for approval of the settlement stipulation. And looking historically at some of the projections of 1993, where it was anticipated of having 9,000 customers, 1.7 million decatherms, and seeing that the 2004 actual numbers are 5,800 customers and 690,000 decatherms, it's clear that MDU is in a situation where they're losing money on the system, and it does appear that the return on equity is going to be somewhere below zero. So certainly I think staff has done a good job to get the situation in where we're doing as much as we possibly can for the consumers as far as attempting to keep the impact of the increase as minimal as possible.
I would second the motion, and just a couple of quick observations. I do think it's important to note that this is less than justified, that this rate adjustment is less than is justified, even by staff's, you know, very conservative estimates. In fact, it's about half of what MDU believes is justified and what I think the commission could reasonably believe was justified. The second thing, I was very impressed with staff's input into this process as well. I do think MDU came with a reasonable and responsible request, and yet there were a couple of areas where staff, I think, really improved the agreement that sits before us now. The first is on the basic monthly service charge, and taking MDU's suggested, I think, 760 down to 460. And I do think for a lot of residential customers that will help the initial concern about this adjustment. And then secondly, the allocation of the increases. I think staff made a wonderful recommendation that's reflected in the agreement to change the percentages to the extent that the commercial customers versus residential are paying for the necessary adjustment. And with that, I would second the motion.
I will concur, and the points that I would have wished to make have already been made, but I will reiterate two of them. And the first is that I appreciate the reasonableness of the request begin with, and secondly, I very much appreciate the work that staff put into this and the fact that, as Dusty pointed out, they made it a much better proposal, and I do very much appreciate the fashion in which the MDU and staff worked together to benefit the citizens who are affected by this.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda, number 2, NG05009, in the matter of the filing by Mid-American Energy Company for approval of tariff revisions. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions?
Mr.
Mr. Commissioner, this is Jean Kelly, and I represent MidAmerican Energy Company on this filing.
Good morning. Please proceed.
MidAmerican is seeking approval of a revised administrative charge for this monthly metered transportation gas pilot project, or what we call the MMT program. Along with this filing, there's also some proposed tariff language changes to align with tariff language in its sister program, which is called the Interruptible Monthly Metered Transportation Gas Pilot Tariff. The MMT tariff was originally approved by the Commission in November of 2004. This tariff requires that the administration charge be reconciled annually, with revisions to become effective in the month of September. The proposed administration charge increased from 8 cents to 16 cents per decatherm. The increase is due primarily to undercollections in the administration of this program. This is due both to the additional cost and also the fact that the throughput, or how we looked at our usage in determining the charge itself, and was less than what we realized, due mostly to the warming weather that we've had recently. The recovery for the undercollection, however, we spread over 2 years rather than 1 year, so that the impact will not be as great. The proposed administration charge of 16 cents per decatherm was approved by the Commission on July 28th in the sister program, the Interruptible Monthly Meter Transportation Program tariff. So at this point, we're just asking to allow the 16 cent administration charge in this program as well. Some of the tariff language modifications that we have included in this filing, it goes to eliminate the reconnection fee for customers who are on the program and want to return to sales service. We also we eliminated the eligibility restriction, which requires that customers be non-transport or non-interruptible. This was eliminated as well in our language. Finally, there was a size restriction on the customers for this program, and we are also eliminating that size restriction and just basing the eligibility for the program for schools and for governmental entities that are heat sensitive. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer that for you.
Thank you very much, staff.
Thank you, Commissioner. The changes here, as the company explained, are the same as the changes made in a prior firm docket that was approved by the Commissioner previously. I would just reiterate that as far as the administrative charge goes in the tariff right now, it is annually can be trued up or updated. But this is a pilot program designed to run through August 31st, 2007. Normally, administrative fees like this would be set during a rate case and remain in effect. Because this is a new service, first, it was unknown exactly what those administrative fees would end up being. There's no prior history to go by. So that provision was allowed, and it would be contemplated that maybe it would not be need to be updated in future after some historic information is gained and after the initial run through August 31st of 2007 of this pilot program is achieved. So.
Thank you. Any questions from commissioners?
Mr. Jacobson, I reviewed the docket of material, and in my mind it categorized these revisions as relatively minor. Have I missed the rest of the iceberg anywhere?
No. Mostly the changes other than the administrative fee were clarification changes and just to make it more customer-friendly when reading the tariff, things like that.
Thank you, sir.
And Eric, any other questions from commissioners? Seeing none, I will move that the Commission approve the tariff revisions.
Second.
I concur.
Next item is NG05010 in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corporation doing business as Northwestern Energy for approval of a contract with Deviations with South Dakota Wheat Growers. And the question today is, shall the Commission approve the contract with Deviations with less than 30 days' notice? And shall the Commission approve the tariff revisions? Mr. Decker, have you joined us? Jeff Decker? Is anyone on the line representing Northwestern? Seeing none, we'll go to staff.
Thank you, Commissioner. The contract in this case was necessary because Northwestern, unlike all the other gas companies, does not have a line extension policy in their tariff. And so Normally, they would. It's included in the cost of service during a rate case, but however, when it's an extraordinary event like this, it needs to be separately identified with a customer and collected from that customer. The data responses from the company show that this is being charged for and collected from the customer in a very similar fashion to what is utilized by other companies for doing the same purpose. Commission staff has no problems with the filing. We'd recommend approval.
And I assume this is okay with the customer?
All yes.
Okay, thank
yes.
you. Any other questions from commissioners? Seeing none, I would move that we approve the contract with deviations with less than 30 days' notice and approve the tariff revisions.
Second.
I concur.
Next items are under telecommunications, and number one, we have a lengthy list of certifications regarding USF, and that item number one is in the matter of the request for certification regarding its use of Federal Universal Service support in dockets TC05, 113, 116, 117, 118, 119, 120, 121, 122, 123, 124, 125, 127, 128, 129, 130, 131, 132, 133, 134, 135, 139, 140, 141, 142, 143, 144, 145, 146, 148, 149, 150, and 151.
And Mr. Vice Chairman, you would make a wonderful auctioneer someday.
That's right. Thank you. That's why I was chuckling. Today, shall the Commission provide a certification to the Federal Communications Commission and to the Universal Service Administration Company regarding the plan for use of Federal Universal Services support as proposed in each of the above dockets. Staff.
Thank you, Chairman. This is Harlan Best of Commission staff. One note of correction that I will provide the Commission is in docket 194. On page 2 of that request for certification, it indicates that the access line count for Jefferson Telephone is 3,218 customers. It is actually...
Mr. Best, did you say 194? 149. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The line count is shown as 3,218, and it should be 476.
Thank you.
With that... correction, the other dockets have been reviewed by staff, and we would recommend that the Commission provide a letter of certification to the Federal Communications Commission and to the Universal Service Administration Company.
Thank you. And I should note that counsel for a number of the affected providers is here and present if anyone has any questions. With that, any questions from the commissioners?
I have none.
Mr. Chairman, if there are any questions, I'll move that the Commission provide a certification to the FCC and to the Universal Service Administration Company regarding the plan for the use of Federal Universal Services support as proposed in each of the above dockets.
And I second.
I will concur.
And the final item on the agenda is number 2 under telecommunications, TC05137, in the matter of the joint petition for extension of suspension date and the date to file further suspension requests. And the question today before the Commission is, shall the Commission grant intervention to the South Dakota Telecommunications Association, Mid-Continent Communications, and WWC License LLC? Staff?
I believe the companies are here if they want to present their cases. But a staff would recommend granting intervention.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Kennecke, good morning.
Good morning again, commissioners and staff. Brett Kennecke from Mid-Continent. We would request intervention in this docket. Local number portability was a big issue last year, and it still is, and we'd like to be heard on this issue as it's brought before the commission. We'd appreciate your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Rogers, good morning.
Thank you, commissioners. I would just tell you that on behalf of the companies represented in this joint petition, we do not oppose intervention of the parties that have petitioned to intervene.
Thank you. Mr. Wieczorek?
Thank you, Commissioner. As you know, and the Commission's well aware, WWC has an interest in the proceedings that occurred during the original action and would ask that be allowed to intervene to protect the right against the act.
Thank you. Mr. Quite.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner, other commissioners and staff. I'm just glad to hear that Darla doesn't object to our intervention this morning.
You're probably worried about that.
Yeah, I was somewhat concerned. We were involved as an intervener in the underlying LNP suspension dockets, and we would ask for intervention in this case on the same basis. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners?
I move for approval.
Second.
And I concur. Thank you very much, and that ends the ad hoc meeting. Oh, I'm sorry.
The only other question I would ask is I was wondering if the parties would care to make any comments about how the commission should proceed in this case. There is an October 1st deadline. Did any of the parties have any comments on that?
I don't have
any. Okay.
Mr. Wieczorek, nobody's made any comments here in Pierre. Do you have any comments?
I don't, with the exception of, I think the October 1st deadline, wasn't that simply the filing of a request for a continuance?
I'm sorry, Tal. My apologies. Someone dropped off the line when you were speaking. Could you repeat that, please?
Well, and I don't have it sitting right in front of me, but I thought the October deadline was for the filing of the request for a continuance, not an actual inquiry of a.
I will look to Mr. Smith or Ms. Wiest for comments.
Would it be the understanding then, Tal and Brett, that this filing, in your view, satisfies that October 1st deadline?
As a request for continuance?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how I read it.
I mean, they didn't file all, a million separate dockets this time, but I certainly interpret it as attempting to comply with that deadline. Is there going to be, is this going to be a fact-intensive thing here? Or if I'm understanding the petition right, I mean, the fact at issue, correct, is the pendency of the current FCC proceeding? Is there any other fact?
If nobody else is stepping up, this is Calvo Wieczorek. I think Mid-Continent has a slightly different issue, of course, than WWC because they're intramodal issue. As being fact-intensive, I think there will be some issues that will come up that will either require some testimony or some pre-file testimony. But I do not necessarily see it as a two-week marathon that we had last summer.
That's good.
This is Darla Rogers. I would concur with that. As indicated, there may be some factual issues if there have been any changes in the circumstances of the individual companies between the time that the initial filing was made for suspension. Also possibly some issues with regard, factual issues with regard to Mid-Continent. But beyond that, I also do not anticipate a fact-intensive process. We would construe this filing, too, as meeting the October 1 deadline. That was certainly our intention. And we will work with staff on whatever type of procedural schedule you would impose.
I guess what I would ask is that staff and the parties see if you can agree to something, and if you can, just give it to me, and we'll write up an order and do that. If you can't come to an agreement, then we'll come back before the commission and order you to do something.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions on that docket? Good. Thank you. And that ends the agenda of the ad hoc meeting of August 31st, 2005. Thank you.